Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step.
Well, Justin, I'm so glad that you're on my podcast today. Welcome back.
Yeah.
You're my third episode in season one.
I bet it was an amazing episode and everyone needs to go listen to it.
It's probably my top five downloaded podcast.
Is it?
I would say so. Oh, I think so. That's in fun. The top five, yeah. But Justin is a life consultant, a speaker, a teacher. And I was just telling Justin that I send all of my own clients and also friends who are really needing some relational or emotional health, like you guys, your content, your courses are literally life-changing. Mm. So thank you for all the love and healing you're putting out in the world. It's so amazing.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you, Ella.
Yeah. And you are the co-host with Abby, your wife, of the Connected Life podcast.
Yeah.
Which has like over 2 million, 3 million downloads maybe?
About four million
downloads.
Who's counting? I don't know.
Are you famous coming on my podcast?
I am not a big deal.
Yeah, he's not. He's really not. Anyway, so today I wanted to have you on because I ran into you recently and I was like, oh, I need to get Justin on.
That's a reason to have me.
That's pretty much it. Uh-huh. And you can say some wise stuff if you want to, you know.
A little bit.
But I was thinking about it because I could go on many ADHD bunny trails of like topics, and maybe we will today. But I just think that you have a great way of articulating healing and the things that get in the way of us healing. And I was looking through, I get a lot of email marketing, but yours are the ones I like to listen to because you always have great stories. And I was stalking your Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
And I went back and I saw a post about your dad and your mom. Uh-huh. And so I just kind of thought, let's kick it off with talking about our mommy and daddy wounds.
I love it.
Yeah. And how that's, I mean, I think a lot of people aren't as honest about the pain from their childhood because they're loyal to their parents and want to be protective of them. But I want to kind of start off with a post about your dad.
Okay.
And I want us to go, you to take us into what was happening there. But you open up the post of, you son of a bitch. If you ever tell me to listen to you again, I'll knock you the F out. Fiercely gripping the shovel, standing on the flatbed trailer, towering over him, I was prepared to lunge at my father and beat him until he was unconscious. With panic in his eyes, he fervently began a series of unsuccessful attempts to calm me as the inspector on the job site walked in our direction. Justin, calm down. And then you say, don't effing tell me to calm down. You've done this to me my whole life. Tell me what was happening in this situation. I remember reading that post and I was like, I've been in arguments like that. There's often this thing in relationship and your dad saying it here, like, listen, calm down. You're not listening. And that's such like a big pain point in conflict. And yeah, but take us into that situation. What was happening?
You mean besides a violent red rage inside of my mind?
Yeah.
So, I mean, first off, I was triggering back to a couple hundred experiences all happening and kind of culminating into one moment. And all these experiences were years of my dad not being able to teach me well. One of the things is that my dad didn't know how to teach. He's a good man, a hard worker and stuff, but he felt very out of control in his capacity to become patient and present and then be able to meet someone in the learning process. And so a lot of my experiences was him communicating at me how to do something with language that was beyond my years. So he was a master electrician, and he had become a master electrician in his early 20s. In fact, he was the youngest master electrician to ever get a master license in Montana.
Wow.
And so he was brilliant, but he also communicated at a language level about stuff that couldn't be comprehended by a young mind. And he didn't know or have the capacity to enter into the patience of breaking something down and figuring out how I learned. And so for years, he would articulate an idea to me that would leave me confused, and then with more intensity, re-articulate in the same language when I didn't understand. And it would continue to escalate. And what I didn't know is, like, I was living in a constant state of panic with him over it. And eventually it always wound up with the same phrasing. Listen to me, very degradingly. Mm-hmm. Listen to the words I'm saying and do what I'm telling you to do, Justin. And it was in his overwhelm, in his feeling out of control, it became very humiliating and degrading the ways that he communicated to me. And it also was something that there was a lot of blame. I grew up in a household where I was a great scapegoat.
Wow.
For both my parents. And one of the great things about it is we've had a lot of open dialogues. It's been a very painful and eye-opening process over the last 15 years.
Yeah, you've had them on your podcasts, both of them, your parents. And so that's why I'm bringing it up. We're not outing his parents.
Yeah, yeah. They've come on. They've talked about portions of it and whatnot. Yeah. But, you know, in that moment, here I felt... I felt the summation of the years of that in the lack of me having a voice. Because oftentimes when I communicated to my dad about any sort of problem, there was two things that were going on. Either he was completely disconnected and lost in a cell phone business call, or when I did talk to him, he would say a classic phrase, build me a bridge, cry me a river, and get over it. Right?
Yeah.
Or, oh, get over yourself.
Mm.
So here's the repercussions of someone that feels so unseen, so unheard, so powerless, and humiliated. And in one instant, that accumulation turned into an explosion.
Mm.
And it was F you. Mm. I'm done with this. Because I had seen the lifestyle of anger through my grandfather and explosiveness through him, anger through my dad, anger through my mom, like the ultimate trump card that finally, what I was told through my environment was a blow up is what's going to catch someone's attention. Now, this is unconscious,
right?
But the swell of being trapped, powerless, and the idea that maybe if I get big enough, my pain will be seen, it all snaps in one moment. And I literally was ready to take the shovel and beat him.
Yeah.
Like it was uncontrollable rage. And I took off and drove away. And later on, we found each other. He found me in an airport hangar because we were working on an airport. And that's where he sat down with me. And he said, whatever's going on with you matters more than this job right now. And that was the first time in my life that there was some sense that I came before his business.
Wow.
And now maybe somewhere in his heart, that wasn't the reality, but the experience that I had was that was the first time that he was like, all of this could fall apart. Yeah. I need to know what's going on with you right here and now in this moment.
Wow. That's so significant. So how did that feeling like talked down to, or like you're an idiot, like those feelings manifest in your adult life, if that's what you've had like stockpiled?
Yeah, I mean, like for me, I had a severely aggressive inner critic.
Mm.
So it's that voice that says, you know, I'm bad, I'm terrible, I'm a failure, I'm never going to be anything more than a failure, I'm stupid, what's wrong with me? That was something that I battled aggressively. And it ultimately is and did manifest as just extreme self-hatred.
Yeah.
So I really hated the man in the mirror for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I really began addressing in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
But it that haunted me.
Yeah. And so would you find yourself in situations where it was like a little over your head? Like, you know, because it sounds like your dad threw you in the deep end a lot.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself in your adult life kind of being like, I'm so out of my depth? Did that ever happen for you?
Well, yeah. I mean, to kind of elaborate on that, my dad did throw me into highly responsible situations at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And there was the potential that was communicated to me that I could destroy his business if I make mistakes in certain ways. Or there was an expectation as a teenager to manage guys in their 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
And so I did have this, I felt like this debilitating feeling on me of everything in the world is high stakes.
Wow.
And so that was one of my biggest, like, my nervous system was like activated at all times. Mm-hmm. I was in a threat response system. So I was consistently in some level of anxiety, some level of feeling like the world is coming to an end. There's a doomsday ahead of me. No matter what I do, somehow I'm going to screw something up and everything's going to fall apart.
Yeah.
So it was taxing.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I re-say it, I'm like, oh my God, that feels so taxing.
Yeah.
What I felt, because I can feel the familiarity of that, even though that's not my normal. Like when I talk about it, I'm like, oh, I remember what that felt like.
Yeah.
And it was miserable. I lived in my own personal hell. And I'm not just saying that that's all my dad's fault and that this is all my mom's fault. I'm just saying that type of intense environment. I mean, it wasn't just my dad. That was one aspect. My mom was another aspect that brought about a lot of intensity, and it was hellish.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. And we'll get to your mom because— I kind of wanted to share like how our parents really can inform a lot of our mindset and view of life.
And you know, I do want to add to this, you know, the intensity, my dad was always like, we have to get this done. We have to get it done now. And it was like, everything was high stakes within that environment.
Yeah.
And so that bled over into my marriage.
Yeah.
Especially. I mean, our first year of marriage, we stopped. We didn't work for the whole first year, and we took it off and ended up spending time with each other. And that spun me out because, I mean, first off, I didn't have anything to go hide within as far as like doing. And then also, my wife has more of a personality, a whimsical personality. Mm-hmm. It was especially in the beginning where she's like, whatever happens, happens, go with the flow.
Yeah.
And I brought a lot of intensity into the marriage that I think caused a wave of damage that, you know, we've been on a journey of repairing that aspect of what I brought into it, because I was, I could be very demanding. I could be judgmental. I could lack an immense amount of compassion because there was already, like, I ended up replicating, you know, a lot of my parents' behaviors that bleeds in. And one of the things that I found is that when we don't forgive, we end up living in judgment, because my unforgiveness is really my judgment, right? I'm judging someone's actions. It doesn't mean that their actions are something that are acceptable behavior, that it's okay behavior. But I, like, say, for instance, when I look at my dad, if I don't forgive him for the intensity, what I'm really doing is judging him, saying like, oh, there's something about you, your humanity, that I can't identify with. And in that judgment, like, I would never do that. How could you ever do that? We end up unconsciously replicating it.
Yeah.
So to me, part of letting go of judgment is recognizing, oh, this person's a human and I'm human and I'm as capable of that behavior as they are given the right conditions.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that it's right. That doesn't mean that it doesn't need to be healed, and it doesn't mean it doesn't need to be addressed. But as I begin the process of forgiving him, then I can begin to look honestly at the behavior going on inside of me from a shame-free perspective and ask myself, how am I participating in this? How am I replicating this?
Yeah, yeah. It's really cool. I did, you have a course called the Father Series, and it's one of the most outstanding, life-changing, I don't know, it's so foundational as a human to really connect with, like, what did I learn from my dad and what did I learn from my mom? And yeah, the course was so amazing. And I think the big thing, and I think you're hitting on it, this over-responsible, and I have to be the biggest person. And I think one thing that you said is because we project our father onto the father, like Father God.
In the series.
In the series that you're talking about. And a big thing was you said that we need someone bigger than us that knows more about the world than us, that's going to meet us on our level and carry us through and teach us things. And so that was super impactful for me to kind of go, oh, there's someone like bigger that I don't have to know everything. I don't have to be the biggest person. I can actually just be a kid. And so I'd love you to share, like Paul Young, who wrote The Shack, says, it took me 50 years to wipe the face of my dad off the face of God. Like how has that been for you? Like in connection to God and like, you know, that kind of idea.
Yeah. I mean, because the message that was, I guess, the message that I took from my experience with my biological father, my earthly dad, is there's not a lot of grace. There's not a lot of patience. There's not a lot of kindness. You get only praised when you do something really good within the realm of work, so where you can perform. He certainly doesn't want to spend a lot of time with you. These were all bleeding over into this relationship with Papa God.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I had to really do is sit down and ask a question. God, if you're not like a human in the ways of like the irritations, the easily frustrated, all of that, then what are you? Like, I need to know what an unconditionally loving papa looks like. I need to know, like, I looked at the idea of like 1 Corinthians 13 that talks about what love is. Love is patient, love is kind. It goes on to talk about that. And I was like, what would it look like for you as a God to be this type of dad? How would you be involved in my individual moments, those moments where I make messes and that I don't get it all right, that I don't understand certain things? Like, and I had to start reimagining like what that looked like, not just through my mind, but even through relationships. So I began to look for examples of fathering love through other people that came throughout my life. You mentioned Paul Young. He was an example and has continually been an example of a fathering figure who's participated in friend moments and fathering moments.
Yeah.
And fathering moments don't only come from someone who's older than you. They can come from peers and they can come from people who are younger than you.
Yeah.
But it's like I started watching for in these people, what does patience and kindness look like when someone's engaging me? Like I had one friend who was the same age as me, Caleb, and we were swimming at a lake one day and he was like, let's go swim out to this one area. And I said, I can't go that far. He's like, you mean you can't just regularly swim that far? I was like, it's pretty far. I don't swim well. He goes, well, just float on your back and you can swim on your back. And I just stared at him. He's like, you don't know how to float on your back, do you? And I was like, no. You know, and we're in our late 20s, early 30s. And he said, okay, I'm going to teach you. And I mean, there's a beach 100 yards away full of teenagers. mm-hmm. And he puts his hands out like this.
Aww.
He goes, get in my arms.
So sweet.
And it took this moment of, will I allow myself to be a kid again? Like, will I allow myself to, you know, engage the child within and allow myself vulnerably to crawl into another man's arms in front of, like, let go of any ego and be present with this? And so I allowed him to hold me there. And for the next 15, 20 minutes, he's holding me in his arms and he's coaching me through, like, how to swim on my back. And he goes, we can take as long as you need here.
Ugh.
And he wasn't concerned with what anyone might think.
Yeah.
Right. And in that moment, this is part of the repair process because I'm seeing, like, I'm getting something that my child self needed, right? I'm allowing that to happen. I'm like, oh, the kid in me needed a dad who didn't care about anything else and would be fully present and find out what I needed to teach me something. And I allowed that to cross over into revealing something about the fathering nature of God. Like, oh, this is an expression of what God looks like. He wants to come hold us in the midst of our development. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I have dozens of moments like that, that I learned how to get present with.
Mm.
Like they were happening oftentimes throughout my life, but I either rejected them because it felt awkward, funny, weird, whatever you judge it as.
Yeah.
Or I literally didn't know how to absorb it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good because as you're sharing that, I'm remembering when I got the Father series, like the course, I was saying, I was in Reading, but my American dad, which like he's such an acts of service kind of personality and just like he'll... Like if my car's broken down, he's coming to help me, like no questions. And he was like, hey, this got delivered to our house. And like he gave me the thing. And then it was like an awareness moment of like, oh, that's interesting that someone who I have dad moments with, he's not my actual dad, but is delivering it to me. And then I remember I went to church and then you came up to me and you just like put your arm around me and you just are like, I'm just want to pray for you like a dad. And it was like this moment of like repair of like, and you just started like affirming me. You just were saying like how proud you were of me. And I just attracted, it was like the whole spiritual world was conspiring to like have this healed.
Yeah.
And then I watched like This Is Us, which like an episode just came on where the dad is like got his little daughter who's like a bigger girl and she's like, yeah, I'm really ugly and I'm not pretty enough and I'm too fat and all this stuff. And the dad's like, no, don't you talk about yourself. And he's crying, like fighting for her. Mm. And I love that you're sharing like these moments that create restoration in you, that create a bigger picture of what like Father God is.
And I want to say this, that we are universally across the board all bound to break something in each other.
Yeah.
I've broken things in my wife. I've broken things in the people I love the most.
Yeah.
It's because we're human.
Yeah.
We're messy. Like we can't avoid that. So, you know, like when we think about our parents, like universally every parent, no matter how well you do, your kids are going to walk away with pain.
100%.
You know, you can only hope to be a good enough parent. They talk about that in complex PTSD. Good enough parenting or good enough mentorship. There's like certain aspects that are needed. And when you don't meet even the good enough aspect, like for someone who has failed as a parent, you get to also give yourself compassion. There's two things that, you know, correlate. One, I think it's so necessary to learn how to face ourselves here and now. I'll go on a bunny trail real quick if you don't mind.
I love it. It's great.
I've really been thinking about the idea that I watch a lot of near-death experiences, the conversations about people who are died, gone into the afterlife and come back and live from it. People from being atheists to every religious background, there's some universal conversations that happen as you see the thread of all of them. And one of them is that there's an unconditionally loving being or presence that's always there that meets them. That's across the board. I have never heard one that didn't have that inside of it. A good portion of them have a conversation regarding life reviews. Like, and in these life reviews, there's no judgment. It's not like, you're a terrible person. Look at what you did wrong. It's a like, hey, let's sit down and get present with the reality of your participation on earth. And that reality is found within revisiting experiences, both the places where we were participating with beauty and love and how not only we felt, but how we finding out the feeling that we left inside of someone else as much as the painful ones, right? Where we ended up leaving some destruction and chaos inside of the world. And we just get to sit with the reality of like, oh, right, that just is what it is. This is the pain that I imparted and this is the love that I imparted and how I participated through all of it. And the idea is that, you know, graciously, we need to face ourselves at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we can wait until an eternal experience and skate through life, missing out what we came here to extract in the first place. Or we can begin to say like, hey, I want to engage and look head on in how I'm participating, how I have participated, so that it can change the way that I participate moving forward.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying about this is like, when I look at the condition of a parent who's made messes, like that doesn't have to be something that is deeply shaming. That can be something where we go, hey, if I step into this in a matter of fact way, I just want to understand the impact and how I've made the impact that I've made. All of a sudden, we are cultivating this shame resilience.
Yeah.
And what we're doing is we're engaging love.
Yeah.
And we're engaging a process that if we do it here, it becomes an open door to be thrown forward. We get to go forward into more freedom mm-hmm. from shame, more freedom from self-judgment, more freedom from being harsh and critical towards others. We actually get to engage the nature of love if we're willing to actually face ourselves here and now.
Yeah.
And so in all of this, you know, I'm really getting down to, I look at this and I go, hey, we all have common humanity. Mm-hmm. When I look at my past, I can look at it through the lens of my parents aren't villains. Mm-hmm. I'm not the victim, but I did have pain and I create pain. And with that lens, we can begin a healthy process of discovering what we began to believe from our past pain, how that's affecting us now and how that affects us moving forward. And we can begin the process of healing that.
Yes, yeah, so good. I love how you so beautifully articulated that. And because I think a lot of people shy away from working through their parents' stuff because they don't want to blame, but then ultimately the pain is going somewhere. Like it's offloading on people around yep. you. So it's healthy to assess it.
And it's sculpting the way that you approach every part of your life,
yeah.
whether it's business, it's your kids, it's your spouse. It's like, it's coming out.
Yeah.
And it's true of that. Like in our most intimate relationships, I realized that if I didn't deal with the pain that happened between me and my parents, and I wasn't direct in confronting that, it spilled over into me reenacting that same behavior with my wife. And so she paid the price. She paid the price of every triggered moment where I'm having a battle with her, but I'm actually having a battle with my mom.
Yeah.
I'm actually having a battle with my dad.
Yeah.
And she's paying the price.
Yeah.
For it. And that's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's ultimately what happened with my dad towards me, my mom towards me, is they were having battles with someone else that they weren't addressing.
Yes.
And offloading it onto another person.
Yeah, totally. So speaking of your mom, like you have another post that you wrote, which was really great. And it was about, you just wrote, stop crying right now and act like an effing parent in this relationship for once in your life. It's time for you to be the parent, not me. This is a moment where you are living, well, you and Abby are married and you're living with your parents. And yeah, so what was happening in that moment?
Yeah, so we had a 7-month stint of living with my parents after our first year of marriage.
Wowzers.
So we moved back in with them. And, you know, I was going through a process of facing some of my greatest fears, mm-hmm. which was an invitation that I put out there into the world at 25. I said, I'm ready to face all my greatest fears no matter what it costs me. Because mm-hmm. I realized that fear was the gateway between us and the destiny of who we're created to be.
Wow.
Like I have to actually step up and pass through fear and get liberation from it in order to step into the true mm-hmm. authentic expression of Justin. Because fear was limiting me. And one of those fears was that I would end up going back to the small town that I had been from and somehow working for my dad. Because I saw the disaster of my dad returning home, right? And all of a sudden, there was an invitation to step into going back, living with them, working for my dad, and finding out the next phase of our journey. And in facing that fear, that also meant us being in confined enough spaces where some of my family dynamics were being exposed to Abby, and it couldn't be hidden anymore. Right. Mm. So light hits the darkness, it comes out and it unfolds. And there was like World War III beginning between my mom and my wife. as my mom was feeling very exposed inside of it. Yeah. And I also had to begin the process of confronting her about a lot of violent abuse. Mm. So that was physical, verbal, and emotional inside of my childhood. And I mean, she came from a very abusive background and she felt very powerless. And again, it replicated because it wasn't looked at and it poured out on me and she felt a lot of shame about it. Mm. And she didn't want to address it. And I felt very much that I had to be the adult as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of people relate to that where they're like, I felt like I had to be the adult in the household because my parents were such a mess. And it's a painful position to be in. And I began in that conversation you're addressing to talk about the realities of the effects my mom had on me with my childhood. And she started to cry. And oftentimes her tears became all about her.
Yeah.
You know, those tears weren't repentance tears. Oftentimes they were shame tears.
Yeah.
They were, I feel bad and I want this resolved in me. Don't tell me that I'm bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I'm grieving because of your experience that you've had. And I snapped. That was another moment where I snapped and was like, absolutely not. You don't get to be the child here in this situation. I need to finally be that. And I, for the longest time, was very scared of hurting my parents' feelings.
Yeah.
I very rarely wanted to address things inside of the relationship because I hated watching the shame that they went into.
Yeah.
As much as I hated being dismissed.
It's like, which heart am I going to choose?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was a sense of like, I am a bad son if they feel bad emotions.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of reasons why people don't confront things. And neither of those situations do I think that they were ideal ways of confrontation. They're not even ideal ways of being heard. They just happen to be the crux of a volcano that goes off and says, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that had I been given the right tools, it would have looked much different, those dialogues.
Yeah.
It would have been done with a lot more patience, a lot more kindness, yet still a lot of directness.
Yeah, yeah.
Boundaries within it.
Yeah. But what I love from these two experiences, because later in the post that you share that your mom acknowledged that she put you through pain.
Yes, she did.
And then in the other scenario with your dad, he said, you're more important than what's happening here.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about what validation is and why it's so important in healing.
Yeah. Well, validation, first off, is a really difficult thing to do for a lot of people to say like, hey, whatever's going on for you and whatever happened matters to me. It's usually difficult because one, we feel shame. Two, sometimes someone's experience doesn't align with our experience.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And so oftentimes to validate someone can feel like I'm admitting that everything they said is exactly the right scenario.
Mm.
Like the retelling of this story is correct in all the details of it.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't want to be committed as guilty for stuff that I didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things as a side note within validation is that the process of a validation begins with the reality of, hey, someone had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people come to me and say that I didn't love them and I didn't care about them and all kinds of things. And I'm like, that's not true at all. I was fighting for you behind the scenes in a million different ways. And, but what I'm listening for is I'm extracting what is their experience. Oh, what I hear is you're saying that you were feeling unlovable and that you were feeling like you didn't matter and that you were feeling like you were being dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
And that does matter to me. I don't want someone to have that type of experience in their life.
Right.
So I'm really sorry. That matters to me. And so when you ask about like, what's the value of validation? Validation, oftentimes people will loop. Like I used to have people who would come into my office and we're having conversations about marriages that are 30 years in and they're still having a fight about like the first year when the wife made the husband a pie and he wouldn't eat the pie that she made and she felt so devastated by it. And he was like, it was just a pie and I didn't like that kind of pie. But that was the most vulnerable moment of her life. And so they're looping. Mm-hmm. And people are like, why does this keep happening? Because they're waiting to just be seen.
Yeah.
And so in the human condition, the minute I can look at someone and be like, oh man, it sounds like that pie, like all your efforts went into that. And that was a very vulnerable thing, mm-hmm. making that. That was the first pie you ever made. Yeah, it was. And I could tell that you were really trying to love me. I was totally trying to love you. I was just, oh my gosh, I can't believe, oh, I'm so sorry I missed it and I didn't eat the pie. And I just want you to know that it matters to me that you know that I loved you. Oh, it does. Okay. And there's a sense of once I've been seen, heard, and understood, I go, that's all I needed. Mm-hmm. And people can actually put something to rest inside of themselves often.
Yeah. That's so good. I think like, because I've been teaching emotional health to students for the last 7 years, and we'll talk about empathy and validation and like how to do it. But there always comes a point where you're like, but what if another person doesn't know how to? And what if my parents will never acknowledge? Or what if my parents are dead? And then how do I ever reconcile or feel heard and seen? So how do we validate ourselves or find validation when maybe someone really won't hear us and see us in pain?
Yeah, like my head goes into a bunch of different places. I do want to back up and say, oftentimes we're wanting to get validation, but we're not setting people up for success.
Yeah.
So our approach to it.
Yeah. I love that you shared that. It's good.
So oftentimes people come when they want to share a problem and they use a lot of blame language and attacking language. You did this. This was it. We decide what their intention was. You didn't love me.
Yep.
And that's a really hard thing to try and validate.
Yeah.
One of the things, if we really want to be able to get validated, we have to learn how to narrate. And so narration is a tool that has transformed so many people's lives that I've worked with. And narration is telling somebody about their internal experience. And it takes a lot more vulnerability to narrate. Because if I can say, Ella, you don't care about me, that's not vulnerable.
Right.
Saying, Ella, I can tell that I'm feeling unlovable in this relationship. I can tell that something inside of me feels scared that I'm going to be rejected. I can tell I'm feeling rejection. I can tell that I'm feeling abandoned. And I know that that's happening inside of me. I don't know what role you're playing inside of it, but I know when we have these interactions, I feel really rejected by it. That's an invitation into like, that's a vulnerable invitation to be seen.
Yeah.
And that sets us up for an entirely different experience of potentially being validated. Like, oh, you feel rejected? I didn't know you were feeling rejected.
Yeah.
Oh, you're feeling unlovable right now? Oh, I'm so sorry. Like that matters to me. How can I participate with you and make it different?
Yeah.
Like my defenses don't have to go up when it doesn't feel like a rocket launcher shot at me.
Yeah. I find that so helpful because I teach on validation. And I think in my journey, I can go into like a fawn response of like, I'll validate everything, even though you just vomited all over me and told me all this stuff. And I'll walk away feeling like, I just have vomit all over me and I really validated you, but I don't feel okay. So what am I doing wrong? Like what in that scenario, like how do you hold boundaries?
Yeah.
But also hear people, but also listen to yourself.
Yeah. So part of it is like, hey, I really want to be able to meet you inside of this and I want to be able to validate you.
Yeah.
I'm hearing a lot of you language. I mean, it feels pretty intense and aggressive. I'm hearing a lot of all the things that I did, but I'm not actually hearing about the impact. I'm not hearing about how you felt. Tell me about how you felt.
That's good.
Well, I felt that you betrayed me.
Yeah.
To try again.
Yeah.
Like, are you feeling exposed? Mm. Are you feeling like, I really want to understand you. This is about me understanding you and I'm not understanding through this language over here. And so I keep leading someone back into a vulnerable conversation. Like, are you feeling misunderstood? Are you feeling alone? Are you feeling unheard? But I'm requiring them to dig deeper. Mm-hmm. Is there sadness there? Am I getting a sense of sadness? No, I'm pissed off at you. You're an asshole. You're telling me a lot more about me and I want to stay with this, but if I keep hearing about me, I don't know that I have the capacity to.
Yeah.
So I hear that I'm an asshole, but that doesn't tell me about how you've been affected.
Yeah. Yeah. And all these opinions are really just projections anyway.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
But I want to
answer. But also valid. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I do want to answer your original question on validation. So a lot of times, like, here's the reality. People are creating debt that they can't pay inside of our lives.
That's a good word.
So my parents don't have the capacity to pay back any of the debt that exists there.
Yeah.
Like it's beyond them.
Yeah.
And so the question becomes, like, even if they do validate me, that can accrue, or that can chip away at a little bit, but it's just not going to eliminate the debt, right? So it can feel good and it can be like, oh, that feels relieving. But I also am very powerless to whether or not they validate me in those circumstances. And to me, the healing process is about empowerment. How can I find this? Like, how can I find freedom? How can I find forgiveness? How can I find resolution if this person isn't willing to participate and doesn't know how to participate, right? And one of the things for me has been me being able to sit down and be present with my story. So when I'm like, and mom hurt me in this way and dad hurt me in that way, like, I want to have that conversation with them. They might not be able to. What does it look like for me to be still and settled and be able to hear, like, yeah, mom was very aggressive and harsh. She was violent in many ways, Justin. That matters to me. Your story matters to me. And it begins with this settling into humanizing our story and humanizing the person in the mirror. I had to really begin to see, like, the condition of not only how other people treated Justin, but how was I treating Justin? Mm. I had to rebuild a connection internally.
Yeah.
Where I could sit down and begin to, this is one of the hardest things for people to do, which is engage compassion. I've had to learn how to engage compassion not only towards the things that I experienced with other people, but engage compassion in the ways that I acted towards people and engage compassion in how I treated myself, right? And that repair work started creating this internal experience where all of a sudden I was like, if my wife never sees me on the behaviors that she's done, do I have compassion and care and understanding for the experience I had? Yes. Am I on my team? Yes. In that space, I'm never alone. But I had to really get honest with my story. And a lot of people don't want to even look at their own story.
Yeah.
They want other people that have impacted them to look at their story, but they don't want to look at their story, not in a way that they're compassionate and kind and tender and patient with it. And that also meant I had to be willing to take as much time as needed going through processing pieces of pain.
Yeah.
Right? We want other people to take that time, but we won't take the time to be like, yeah, today I needed a good cry. I sat down and I cried and I felt the grief of the experience. And I spent time not telling myself to get over it, but telling myself, hey, you can take as much time as you need, Justin. I really appreciate that this is coming to the surface.
Mm.
And we can be our own advocate.
Yeah.
And that's a game changer.
That's so powerful. I love it. I'd love you to, because this is really ultimately getting away from that blame lifestyle where it's everyone's fault. I think Brené Brown says you only have to switch on the news to hear it's, you know, what have we got to fear and whose fault is it? Like, you know, and so do you have any examples of, like, maybe in your marriage, like how you've shifted away from blame? And you've kind of mentioned it in, like, talking about yourself, but, or maybe why do people blame?
Yeah. I mean, one, blame is, I imagine a few different things. It's one, shame. Like, I don't want to, okay, let me back up. In our black and white thinking, we have a villain victim mentality.
Yeah.
Right? That's where blame comes in. Nobody wants to be the villain.
Mm.
So it's either my fault or it's your fault.
Mm.
And that's where shame has a lot of power inside of that, because there has to be a villain and then there has to be a victim. But in a healthy way of approaching life, there is no victim. There is no villain. There's just humans who are perpetuating pain. And inside of that, that becomes an entirely different experience. I don't have to blame you for it. I can just begin the process of being like, I just know I'm hurt.
Yeah.
I know I feel broken by this experience. I know that I have something to heal here. I have grief that needs to be taken care of inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm left in confusion.
Mm.
And to me, the healing process is so much easier when there's not blame inside of it. Because blame is also a deflector. Yeah. Blame doesn't require me to get vulnerable with the reality of what's going on inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
I can stay in those primary, like, I'm just angry at you and you did this. And the other thing is that I don't think that we as human beings have rightfully taken ownership for the reality that we've co-created every experience we have.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. Like,
you know,
ownership.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I want to say this, you know, like in my childhood, I didn't create the abusive mess that was going on externally. I co-created a belief system inside of myself. There are kids that will come out of those circumstances, I know because I've met with them, who, you know, their childhood thought would be, my parents are batshit crazy and I want to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I created a belief system that I am terrible and I must be bad. And I didn't know that I was creating in that belief system, but I was co-creating something that it perpetuated and exacerbated the pain that I was experiencing. And then from that belief system, I co-created all kinds of situations
mm-hmm.
that I instigated inside of my life. And so we as human beings don't want to go down that rabbit trail of thinking about what we're co-creating, because then we get our identity involved inside of it. We go, oh, does this mean I'm a bad person?
Mm.
And I don't want to do that. Does this mean that my life is this way because somehow I did this thing that I don't like? Like the result is 3 divorces now. Like I don't want to say that I played any part in that, but I think that once we take our identity out of it,
yeah,
like, this isn't a conversation about who I am as a person.
Right.
This is a conversation about cause and effect.
Yeah.
I have co-created somewhere inside of this. The cause and effect is these experiences. And the question becomes, can I change that?
Mm.
And that becomes a very empowering scenario. And it actually causes me to step further and further away from blame. Because like right now in my marriage, I can tell you, like, I know for a fact, Abby has showed up in ways that have been very unsafe. And I've showed up in ways that have been very unsafe.
Right.
And I can blame Abby all day long for a lot of the pain I'm currently experiencing, or I can say, okay, what is the role that I played in co-creating this? How did I perpetuate this? Oh, yeah. I didn't have any emotional health tools. From an early age, I had a lot of rage and anger that came up that caused threat inside of our house, where she would then react in her own anger and frustration, mm-hmm. right? But that started dissipating blame and it started perpetuating personal healing and transformation.
Yeah, yeah, wow. I love all of this. It kind of sort of triggers the thought in me, like, I think I've listened to so many of your podcasts, and like you, I think you've done one on bursting the denial bubble. Mm-hmm. And I think when you talk about getting in the driver's seat of your life, or like connecting to like, what am I feeling rejected? Like actually connecting with yourself, you have to face yourself. And I remember even hearing some of your podcasts talking about denial, and I kind of had a little bit of like a, I don't think I'm in denial.
Did you have denial about your denial?
I had denial about my denial. I literally, and I would be like, no, I'm a super self-aware person. And then probably a year and a half ago, a huge denial bubble got burst about the way that I just show up in life as a people pleaser. And I felt so much shame, but it was like, and it was so painful.
Uh-huh.
But it was like so, I mean, it made me more gentle towards like, and not being judgmental towards people in denial. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I'd love to know like why you think people, yeah, what are some common ways why we don't like face the areas of denial? And part of me is also like, I think it's safe. So it's like, how do we create safety to feel safe to come out of denial?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, denial, is obviously a protector.
Yeah.
It's something we use to protect ourselves from having to feel, what they refer to as intolerable emotions. Like there's certain emotions that each of us don't want to have to feel. Mm-hmm. One of Abby's intolerable emotions, which she talks about, is rejection. At all costs, she doesn't want to have to feel rejection.
Yes, I so relate.
And it feels intolerable to engage anything that might make her feel that.
Yeah.
And so...
You don't feel that?
I feel rejection, but it's not an intolerable one.
Okay.
For me. Yeah. There are certain emotions that are like, this is the one thing I don't want to have to face. And so that's where denial often comes in. There are certain emotions that people are like, I never want to have to feel sadness.
Yeah.
I never want to have to feel anxiety. Yeah. So I'll pretend like I don't have it. I'll deny that it exists. And what we're really doing is we're separating ourselves from ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We're creating internal distance and dissonance.
Mm.
And so I think that denial creates this illusion that it's protecting us. And first and foremost, as a side note, in order to break denial, we have to acknowledge that it's not actually benefiting us.
Right. That's good. Yeah.
Like I still feel all these emotions. They're just subsurface level. I'm still doing all this behavior.
Yeah.
I'm just acting like it doesn't exist. Everyone else sees it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I am perpetually creating more difficulties and strain on my life the more that I engage denial. So we have to just out denial first and foremost.
Yeah.
What was the original question?
I wonder, like, how do we create safety to come out of denial?
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So one of the things is that we have to begin to eradicate our own personal judgment towards ourselves. So we have to enter into an intimate relationship with forgiveness, with others, but most of all, first and foremost, with ourselves.
Yeah.
The more that I can forgive myself and I can have compassion, because compassion is the opposite of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
When I engage that, then I don't need to, I start feeling safe because the person in the mirror I know isn't going to beat me up if I get honest about something that I'm doing. Like if I'm making messes in a relationship with someone, but I know that the guy in the mirror is going to be very compassionate and understanding and curious, then what's going to happen is my soul is going to be like, okay, I don't need denial. Because even if I come to the reality that I've really hurt a bunch of people, there's going to be this intimate connection with the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror that is going to actually be so receptive of me that I'm going to be able to easily get through this.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's crazy, but people have a violent reaction to self-love, a violent reaction to self-compassion, a violent reaction to self-forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because they believe if I engage these properties or these qualities, these characteristics, then I'll continue to make poor decisions. So the lie that most people believe is that they can operate in the nature of darkness to produce the nature of light.
Yeah.
Right. So if I hate myself enough or judge myself enough, I will be a better human being. I'll be more loving. I'll be more kind. I'll be whatever. And I'm like, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. You can never produce love from hate.
Yeah.
You can never produce compassion from judgment. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And so what we have to really realize is that the thing that we want is only through this road of compassion, judgment, or compassion and forgiveness.
Yeah.
Self-love, right?
Yeah, that's so good.
So that creates the safe place.
Yeah. So
to face ourselves. Because also the other side note is denial is really this thing of like, I don't want to face myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, you know, we said this earlier in the conversation, but it's really about, will I begin to face myself here and now? Because I will have to do it at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So good. Now that you've done all this healing and like you've gone through, you've done all these. So, I mean, actually, I'm curious to know, like, what has been the main form? Like, you talk about, like, sort of journaling or sitting down and getting connected to yourself, but like, how is counseling yourself receiving it played into all of your learnings, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the intimate time with myself, if you're saying, how has that played into the outflow?
Well, no, I think, like, how. I mean, we can listen to podcasts and get ideas, but like actually sitting in a counselor's chair, like where have you gotten yeah, where have you gotten different sources of healing? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah. Well, first off, I'm still a broken mess, and that's a judgment-free statement.
Same.
I mean, ask Abby the crazy shit I do sometimes. You know, those are conversations that I'm having with an SE therapist.
What's an SE?
Somatic experience.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Then I meet with a EFT, emotionally mm-hmm. focused therapist. those are consistents that I've done like weekly for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm bringing, cause I enjoy having another party that is just unbiased, and they're like there to love and allow me to make that space. There's been that as part of my process. And then the other part has been me spending intimate time with myself for years, asking hard questions and being willing to access the tears that I was scared to access. And a lot of it began with, I give myself permission to feel certain feelings. I give myself permission to ask the tough questions. Mm-hmm. And going back to that one concept, which is I give myself permission ultimately to face my greatest fears, no matter what it costs me. Mm. And I think that like part of what that practically looks like is there are times where I will just sit down and I'll sit there and be like, Justin, what is it that you need to share with me today that I've been avoiding or that I haven't been listening for or attuning to?
Mm-hmm. Great question.
I'll take those pauses and I'll just write them down or I'll make note of them inside of my head. And I've gotten really good at asking for forgiveness from myself.
Yeah.
Which has helped so much more easily come up. Like, I'm so sorry. Please forgive me for that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I haven't spent time or I haven't listened to that or I haven't faced that or I want to understand more. There's always an idea of invitation. And I have given myself permission to take a break at inconvenient times to address something that's coming up inside of me. Mm-hmm. So I've cultivated a lot of self-awareness and I've allowed myself the permission to like, hey, I'm really busy and I have a lot to do, but I have permission right now in this inconvenient time to take a quick time out.
Wow, that's so good. Yeah. So what's the payoff of freedom, like doing all this healing? And then what's the cost?
I mean, the cost, you know, I explain sometimes the cost of freedom as like the idea that we are all sitting in hell in our own personal hells. Mm-hmm. You know, our self-hatred, our deep amounts of shame, condemnation, self-criticism, heavy amounts of crushing guilt, you know, that inner critic. But we're in hell, and the price of getting out of hell is walking out of a door, in the door of hell. And as we're walking out of it, it feels like we're being ripped apart limb from limb sometimes. It feels so excruciating. It's like almost like hell has its hooks inside of us.
Yeah.
And as the hooks being pulled out, it feels like a tearing process as we're realizing that these things are not who we are. Their voice isn't our voice. Their thoughts isn't our thought. That's not authentically who I am. The truth of my being is love. And the darkness is being extracted out of that. And it's extreme amounts of discomfort.
Yeah.
It's conversations that we wanted to avoid our entire lives. It's feeling intense amounts of fear that are suddenly at the surface that we've had under the surface. A lot of times people, the cost of freedom, they're feeling things logically for the first time, but it was all there under the surface always. A low-level feeling that created all the depression and the places where they didn't want to live and they wanted to get out of everything and the avoidance. Like, it was an amalgamation in their gut already.
Yeah.
But their awareness, we have to now become aware. The cost is becoming aware of the hell that we've actually lived inside of. And that awareness is shocking to the system, and it causes difficulties again in relationships.
Right.
But the price, the cost to us, is nothing in comparison to what we get out of it.
Right.
Because what I get out of it is a sense of peace. Mm. Like, I recently had a circumstance of a massive betrayal that was really devastating inside of my world, right? But I'd paid a price in regards to freedom. That price didn't mean that I didn't have bad stuff happen to me.
Right.
It meant that I was so much faster to get to a peace that transcends any understanding.
Yeah.
It meant that I was able to connect into the idea that I'm not abandoned and alone inside of it. It meant that I could find love in the midst of it instead of spiraling out in panic attacks over and over again through all of it. It meant that, like, the byproduct was I could find myself feeling this firm, steadfast foundation in the midst of things being very unknown.
Yeah.
And it meant that I could stay in a place of not becoming bitter and resentful.
Mm.
I could stay connected to hope. I could still find my joy. I could choose to continue to trust people, even though I had had a radical betrayal. However, 15 years ago, this stuff went down. If it went down, trust. I don't trust anyone. I don't want anyone around me. I hate people.
Yeah.
I'm bitter and resentful. This person is taking up space rent-free inside of my head daily, going over and over again. Like, that's what would have happened. But me paying that price ended up liberating me to walk out the messiness of humanity in an entirely different way.
Wow. Yeah, that's so good.
So it doesn't mean that I didn't have sadness. It doesn't mean that I didn't have grief. It means that the way that I processed it didn't torment me.
Yeah.
It means that I could be in torment-free grief in many aspects. And the places that did feel tormenting, I went, oh, there's an area that I haven't connected to something that needs to be resolved inside of me.
Yeah.
And so it became an invitation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, even this is the last thing I'll say on this, but like that betrayal, my first response internally to that person, which in the past would have been like, you SOB, you're a terrible human being. Mm-hmm. Can't believe you do this. My first response was, oh, you must be in so much torment inside of you.
Yeah.
Like literally, that wasn't condescending. It was literally like a compassionate, like, oh, there's something that's hurting inside of your world.
Mm-hmm.
And my first response was, I bless you.
Mm.
I bless you to heal. May you find love that resolves these things inside of you. May you find goodness.
Yeah.
May you find hope inside of your life. And right off the bat, I was like, I will choose to forgive you immediately. And that wasn't a forced thing. It was, I have the capacity to do that because I've been facing the barriers that kept me from forgiveness before, which then caused me to not be reactive.
Yeah.
Right? In all of my actions. And I was able to continue to engage wisdom and stay level-headed.
Mm-hmm. So good. Wow. I love it. And sort of in closing, well, thanks for coming on.
You're
amazing. This is so fun.
Thanks for having me on.
I just love learning from you. I'm like, oh, that's something new I haven't heard of. I love this. This is good.
I always feel loved by you.
Oh.
Who doesn't love feeling loved?
I love feeling loved, Justin. Especially,
You've always been a very kind fan. I say fan, but
I'm totally a fan.
Somebody who promote, like, your heart has always been like, oh, I really believe in you, Justin, and I want to promote you. And I've felt very respected.
Mm.
And thank you for that.
Yeah, I do. I think, like, legitimately, your stuff works. The stuff that you do. I've seen so many transformed lives. So I love it. So, in closing, I haven't really asked many guests this question in a while. I remember I asked you the question because the podcast's called The Next Brave Thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually came from me walking out of a counseling session with you. And I said to my friend, so my next brave thing is I have to do X, Y, and Z. And she's like, that should be the name of your podcast. And so I like to ask people like what their next brave thing is. And so today, Justin, what's your next brave thing?
Well, my most practical next brave thing is I'm headed to Poland.
You're going to Poland?
Yeah, to hang out with Wim Hof and do—
That's so insane.
A week-long intensive with Wim and his team and probably another 100 people.
Wow. And guys, you should go follow Justin on Instagram because he did Wim Hof with his dad. It's such a precious
video. I did a cold plunge with him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
the cold plunge.
Cold plunge,
it was really cool. It was very, like, tender experience and beautiful. I do want to say as we wrap it, you know, I don't believe that there's a place where we arrive. I believe part of wholeness is simply connecting with humility.
Mm.
And humility says that I don't have all the answers. It says that I'm letting go of the judgments I have towards myself. And I'm becoming a curious observer of my life and other people's lives. And I don't think that there's pressure to get somewhere. I believe that this life is an invitation to extract something. Kind of going back to what I said in the beginning, I really do believe that there's, you know, there's no proof of this, but I really believe we all chose to come here. Mm. I believe that we were fully, we always have been part of the creation of God, and that earth is a time dispensation that is an extended invitation to know something dynamic about love through experience. And when I look at my earth experience, I get way, way, way less judgmental as I start thinking about the idea that I'm here to go through the messiness of humanity, and inside of it, my spirit or my being came here with a purpose to grow in the knowledge of something. And so when I look at our lives, it's not about, again, it's not about arriving, it's about apprehending.
Mm.
What am I here to apprehend? And from moment to moment, no matter what mess I make or what mess someone else makes, I'm asking the question, what does love look like in this? And what am I apprehending about what love is? What am I learning about love in healing? And it just becomes low stakes. This is a low stakes experience. We make it high stakes.
Right.
It's all low stakes. And we're not bad if there's things we have to repair. We're human.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. So good.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
Thanks for having me here.
So fun. Love it.
Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.